Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Ruhrkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And we are back today with our second recap of the New York Film Festival. Last episode, we talked about our experience with the festival starting, the opening night film, After the Hunt, some of the other films that we saw, Anemone, A House of Dynamite, J. Kelly, Pillion. So go listen to that one. Today we'll be talking about some of the other films that we caught at the festival and some fun experiences that we've had this past week. How was the second half of your festival?
It was great. The New York Film Festival is always a highlight of my year. I think, like we talked about last time, just getting to spend time on the Upper West Side and over by Lincoln Center is always so much fun. Just getting to see new movies, getting to see people that I only really see a few times a year. There's just a kind of magical quality about the festival. And you get to spend a lot of time where one of my favorite films has its final shot, and that is Annie Hall. And I'm bringing this up because Diane Keaton passed away on Saturday, October 11th, and this broke me in a million pieces. She is one of my favorite actresses of all time and so important to me. And I think a lot of her movies really introduced me to New York. And as I've told listeners before, watching Manhattan and Annie Hall, they were hugely influential for me in moving to New York. So when I found out about Diane, I was just absolutely devastated. And I want to pay tribute to her in a deeper way at some point this season, maybe on another episode. But I've had a really hard time articulating why her passing has had such a profoundly deep effect on me, and why I haven't been able to watch any of her movies in full. And I think she just really made me realize what I had in me and what I could do at some point in my life. She's sort of that, like, every woman character in life and on the big screen, yet just possesses so much joy and humor and beauty, and there's so much to her. So the world is not the same without her in it. And yeah, we will, I think, pay tribute to her at another point, but I just wanted to make sure we covered her a little bit today and got to say something about her.
Yeah, believe me, you were top of mind when that headline came on my phone. And my mom had sent me that. It was just so devastating and a shock. I really gasped on the train when I saw that. So completely devastating. And, you know, I always think of, and I think I've mentioned before, seeing her at IKEA in LA. Mm-hmm. And that image of her, you know, wearing her black attire and hat. You know, she's known for being herself. And I think a lot of the tributes online, from Goldie Hawn to Robert De Niro, really celebrated her for that fact. And, you know, with future viewings, we'll always remember her in such a kind way. And I would recommend listening to our episode from almost 2 years ago at this point on The Family Stone on mm-hmm. After Dark and covering that. I immediately thought of that movie, not that that is my favorite, but one that she is an indelible presence in, and I will be watching this holiday season. So I'm sure I'll have extra tears when I watch that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, sorry for the hard pivot to Diane, but I just, when I think of my New York Film Festival experience, I always think of how anytime I'm crossing the street there, right over by Alice Tully mm-hmm. Hall, I always think of Annie leaving Alvy at the end, walking away, and him just standing there watching her go. And I think that shot really, it has a deeper effect on me now that she's gone. But yeah, the festival itself, it's always a wonderful experience and always kind of reinvigorates my love of film. And it's fun getting to talk about the movies too. And I think today we'll have some fun conversations about these. Let's go through some movies that we both saw, and then we can kind of cover some things that we saw separately that we plan to catch later on in the season. But you saw It Was Just an Accident, which was one of my favorite films out of Cannes. This is directed by Jafar Panahi, won the Palme d'Or. This is France's Oscar submission, so they selected, I think, the right movie. And I think we'll be talking about this for the rest of the season, but what did you think of It Was Just an Accident?
I really liked this movie, and my first week there were some great films, lovely movies and experiences, but really during my second week, each new movie I saw became my new favorite, which I wasn't expecting, but was very happy just to keep seeing films that were surprising me. And this was one of them. Obviously, I had heard a lot about this before, having won at Cannes and its continued successes through award season. And we've talked about Jafar Panahi's presence on the pod for at least a few weeks at this point. So I think from how you and Bennett had talked about the movie, and the ending really had me intrigued. And this just goes right along with Panahi's filmography. It's a curious one, and that's a good thing because it keeps you intrigued in his filmmaking. I think that's part of what is so special about his films, in that there's even more comedy in this movie, and it's a journey to understanding who he is and what his characters represent in the film. It's a pretty jarring premise, which starts when this man has to take his car to a repair shop, and one of the guys at the shop is startled, and I didn't really know why, and you don't find out until later, but the way he recognized this guy with the car is that he has a prosthetic leg that squeaks when he walks, and he had previously been tortured by someone while he was blindfolded and had heard this similar sound during that experience. But the way the story unfolds is so unexpected, and at first you really don't know whose side to be on because you don't know what is happening, and it takes a while before you really understand what has happened. So I think hearing from these characters and the fact that they're so different makes this a story you want to talk about at the end. So I think that's a success of this movie and why I think it'll be talked about throughout the award season into the Oscars. And I think it was smart about the international feature category, but I think we'll be talking about it apart from that also, which I think is exciting, especially being from Neon, like some other films that we'll talk about today.
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about this a lot this season just because of the effect that it leaves on you. And with Panahi's presence really across festivals, going to regional festivals, he had a talk with Martin Scorsese at New York, and I think his story connects, like you were saying, so well with the subject matter and the experiences really of the characters in the films. And that can be a really strong combination, I think. So this is going to be, at the time of the release of this recording, it will be out limited in theaters, I believe in New York and LA, and then it will expand after October 15th. So definitely keep an eye out on your cinema schedules. I highly recommend seeing this one in a theater. And I'll let you do the honors for the next title.
So this is, when I saw it, I knew would be a Nick movie, and maybe it wouldn't be as high up on your list, but this is Oliver Lachey's Surratt. This is Spain's international feature submission for the Oscars. This is a wild ride. You had prefaced this, or I'd heard about it, as Mad Max Fury Road meets Climax, and I had seen on Twitter someone call it Mad Max Fury Rave, which I love, and the movie captures you immediately with its score. And I think from that moment on, I mean, they're literally stacking speakers on top of each other in order to have this rave in the desert where you also feel the heat. I think the setting is just as important as the sound, and it's a movie that relies on that auditory experience and how that changes your perspective of that of the characters as well. So it starts out as this rave, and this father with his child is searching for their missing daughter, who is expected in some way. They found out that she may be in Morocco at one of these raves. So they're going around looking for her. Nobody recognizes her, but this group of people mentions that they're going to this other rave across the country after this experience. And during the rave, it gets broken up by police saying they're a disturbance. And so they escape to head to this other location. And the movie's prefaced with El Infierno, this bridge between heaven and hell. And that's really the experience they go on. I'm sure you felt it a bit torturous in many literal and figurative ways.
Mm-hmm.
The music to me was just stunning.
I love the music.
Listened to it on Spotify. That's great.
Yeah.
Good.
I do love the music.
I know this isn't for everyone. I know the music isn't for everyone. It's like electronic trance rave music. And if that's not for you, this movie will not be either. But as things start to happen, I was just completely shocked. And this journey of finding the daughter transforms into something completely different, which becomes one of self-discovery. And I think transcends what is literally on the page that you are watching. So I had this kind of out-of-body experience, and I'm sure others have as well. This ended up tying for the jury prize at Cannes. So this has had similar buzz since that festival, but I think very different from it was just an accident. Tell me about your experience, what you liked or didn't like, had trouble with.
Well, there are some movies where we are just opposites on. I think about me giving 5 stars to Nashville and you giving it 1 star. This is that exact situation in reverse. This is not my least favorite film I've seen at a festival this year, but it's pretty close. I was just really not on board for most of the film. Why take a child to a rave? That's my first question. Like, why was this boy there? Why was the dog there? And, you know, my least favorite types of films are really when the director is trying to give you empty shocks over and over and over again. And to me, I just didn't really feel anything from the shocks. I never connected with a single one of these characters. I don't think the script really cares for them either. And this movie to me is like if Gaspar Noé tried to make Sorcerer. That's how it felt to me. It just didn't click with me. I really don't care for shock cinema. You know this. I like things that take their time, that are a little bit more narrative based, where the characters are really important to the story. And I just, this to me felt like kind of empty provocation. And then it just ends. I just kind of felt like, what was all of that for? And I got up and I was mad that I spent 2 hours in that theater watching it. But I will say, I agree with you on the score and the sound. The score is really creative, and I think that the sound work is great. I just, watching endless suffering is just not usually my jam, I will say.
It's not torture porny to me, but I understood where the ending was coming from and that I wasn't expecting an ending to be tied up. So again, I know this is a divisive film. I'm glad that I liked it. You have other films at the festival that you have loved, and maybe I haven't so much. So if that sounds like something you would like, I would say check it out. If not, don't. That's okay.
I am glad that you loved it, because I think that's kind of the nice thing about New York Film Festival, is that there are these out there different films that are really going to connect with people and are not going to connect with others, and that's okay. I think that crowd pleasers, sometimes you think of that word, that can be like the most boring piece of art at the end of the day. Like, things that are taking risks and doing things differently, at least people are talking about them. And sometimes for the people that that does connect with, it's on a greater, grander level than something that feels a little bit more, I don't know, standard or simple.
I agree with that. I don't know if I'd call this next one a crowd pleaser, but I will say it's one that we both liked, and that is Laura Poitras's and Mark Obenhaus's Cover Up, an American documentary film that centers around Seymour Hersh, a reporter and journalist that has covered cover-ups and political stories from everything from before Watergate to current day with Gaza. And this movie does an excellent job of capturing his personality, which I think he is one of the most exciting and entertaining people I've seen on screen this year.
Yeah.
It was a joy to have those moments when, yes, we see a lot of historical footage, but it comes back to him, and that's what makes this documentary so fun. So I really love this. This was released in Venice, and I hope a lot of people will see this coming soon.
Yeah, I loved Cover Up. So I think the things that this documentary really has going for it, number one, Seymour Hersh, or Cy Hersh, is an incredible subject for a documentary. He reminded me of the way that I felt watching The Pigeon Tunnel with John Le Carré speaking, and how wrapped up you get in their stories and personalities. And he, I think what's cool about him is that you can feel that he's really hesitant to share some of his life experience through it. But also at the same time, I think it's just so cool to see someone who has always been fighting against the establishment, who's always been fighting for what's right. He reminded me a lot of how I feel about Jane Fonda, honestly. But here, what he's doing and what he's done throughout his career as a reporter and as a journalist is to really expose some of the U.S. government's darkest secrets and biggest stains, really, and to show how nothing has really changed. I think that's really what's so powerful about it, too, is that the documentary moves from talking about Vietnam to Abu Ghraib to now Palestine. And you can just see those common threads that have persisted throughout history and to highlighting the truth of what's going on in those areas and in those situations. And the other part of it is that Laura Poitras, she puts her magic in this documentary, because what she does that I really love is about halfway through the film, that's when we actually learn about Cy Hersh's childhood. You learn about his parents. You learn about him not being able to afford school and people taking a chance on him. And most documentarians would put that at the beginning. They would move in chronological order. But because you get to know him and his work early, and then you jump back to that in time, I was so emotionally moved by that. I was tearing up as he's just crying about his teachers and people giving him a chance and getting to where he was supposed to be. It has such a greater impact when you feel like you already know the person. And that's just something only really Poitras can do. So I hope we talk about this really the whole season. I think it's really strong in the documentary race for sure, especially if we think about All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, Poitras's last film. I think Cover Up, though, considering its subject matter and Cy Hersh, I think it could do really well.
I agree. This would be my front runner for documentary feature, and I hope it stays there. I think with Obenhaus partnering with Poitras, he has worked for ABC News for a number of years in many capacities. So I think that adds some of the thrill and the legitimacy of Cy's story to this film, in that you're seeing released confidential footage or documents that support what he's saying. But then we also hear from people who don't like Cy Hersh, and that he's made mistakes in his past, but that he fesses up to those. He's a human. He's flawed like everyone else, but his reporting and how we see that covered is pretty flawless. You know, it's backed by his sources, and I think how he feels about them and how he at one point wants to stop the documentary process and quit because of how he feels he's being portrayed, I think just adds to why I really like this movie and understood him on a pretty deep level.
Yeah. And I think let's talk about some of the films that we saw independently. So you saw Resurrection. I really wanted to see this. I tried and the scheduling just did not line up. So I am going to see it at some point, but I'd love if you could talk about Resurrection.
I think this is one that, again, is divisive, I would say, but I'm so curious what you would think of this, because I think you'd be much higher on it than Seurat. This is a movie that you can't really put into words.
Mm-hmm. More of an experience.
Exactly. I left floating. I was like, what year is it? So much happens during Bigan's film. It also won a special award at Cannes for having a, quote, visionary, extraordinary creation. And that is truly what it is. It's described as having six parts, one for each of the senses, and then one final one for the mind. But the beginning portions made me think of German Expressionism, and he has thanked and mentioned those films like Dr. Caligari and Nosferatu for inspiring this portion. So that does make sense a lot, that it's also up my alley. And that first 20 some minutes just felt like something that I had never seen on screen before. So then for that story to totally pivot and you see these different timelines and characters and trying to weave them all together in your head. And then the ending just really, again, transcends time and space and leaves you feeling a lot of things, wanting to talk about it, not really knowing what happened and making you want to have a second viewing. Those are the experiences that I also love at film festivals. So I know this is getting a release at least wide in January, I believe, but later this year, I think limited. It is not China's submission for the international feature. I don't think this is a very Academy-friendly movie, and that's okay. But I hope you get to see it later on, and I would recommend people seek this out for a very interesting journey.
This feels like a perfect, and you might disagree, I don't know, but I love seeing long movies like this, like long, meditative, strange movies in the morning, like getting a coffee and going to like a 10:30 a.m. screening. So that's probably what I'll do when this comes out at like Film Forum or IFC, wherever they decide to show it here. Mm-hmm. Film at Lincoln Center. I will be there for that first screening of the day, ready to see it.
That sounds perfect. I think it's like 2.5 hours. It's well worth it. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. But tell me about some of the other movies you saw that I wasn't able to see.
Yeah, so I saw a couple of others that I really liked. So I liked Late Fame a lot. This is Kent Jones's latest film. It stars Willem Dafoe and Greta Lee in it. Willem Dafoe plays a poet who was pretty prominent in the 70s, but fell into obscurity, and he gets rediscovered by this group of NYU graduates, students, all sorts of, like, they belong to a very specific type of New York. I honestly could imagine, like, Whit Stillman making a movie like this. And the group that becomes kind of obsessed with him and wants him to start writing again and everything, it's such a specific type of like rich kid academic that I just had so much fun with all of their language and just watching them. And it's actually, I think, a really nice double feature with Peter Hujar's Day, which I actually saw that film the same day as Late Fame as part of the press screenings. And this is Iris Sachs's latest film. Ben Whishaw is playing Peter Hujar, and it's really a two-hander. It's just Ben Whishaw and Rebecca Hall. She's playing a woman interviewing him, and this is an 80-minute interview. That's how the movie is structured. I think that the way I felt about Surratt might be how you feel about this. I think this might be that inverse a little bit. You really are, though, you're watching Ben Whishaw in the coolest apartment you've ever seen just talk about his life in the city in the 70s and that group of artists really at the time. So I think it just has this deep appreciation and love for a particular time and place in New York. So I really vibed with it. I loved the costumes, her makeup. It makes me want to wear blue eyeshadow, which is probably a poor choice, but I am considering it now because of this movie. And I also saw Is This Thing On, which is the closing night film. So another New York movie. This one I think is a little bit bigger than the other two. This is Bradley Cooper's follow-up to Maestro. It's about a man named Alex who is getting a divorce from his wife, played by Laura Dern, and he decides to really find himself, really just by a chance encounter, actually, in the stand-up comedy scene in New York. And I would say that I prefer the drama of Maestro and A Star Is Born. This feels a little bit more stripped back, but it is a really good relationship dramedy. Bradley Cooper is in it. He's in a supporting role. His character's name is Balls. Yes, which is a choice. Andrew Day is also in this. Sean Hayes. But I really liked Laura Dern's performance here. And Will Arnett is pretty good too. I could definitely see this popping up at the Golden Globes in the comedy category and maybe even an original screenplay. It just feels a little bit different from, I would say, his previous films. It doesn't feel as grand as those. It feels a little bit more pulled back.
Did you see this with Cooper? Like, was he there doing Q&As? Did he talk about the movie or Dern or any of the other actors?
So my screening didn't have a Q&A. He just introed it and then brought out the cast. So he just, you know, expressed gratitude for the city of New York, helping him film it. He said he just finished it recently. So that's all we had, though. I haven't watched any of the Q&As or anything yet, so I don't know too much about the creation of it or the idea behind it necessarily, but it played really well in the crowd. People seemed to be really into it.
Yeah, I think we just didn't hear a lot before it was announced that it would have its world premiere at the festival, but I'll have to check these out. You also saw another special movie.
Yes.
That wasn't announced. Talk about that one.
Yeah, so this was actually really crazy. NYFF has not had a secret screening in a long time, I think in a few years. But they had one this year, and there was a lot of noise and chatter about what it would be, and it ended up being Josh Safdie's Marty Supreme, which I actually really liked. I had to settle down with it a little bit because the hype in the room was, it was so much. It was so much. People were acting like this was like the second coming of Citizen Kane or something after they had seen it. And I needed everyone to just bring it down a little bit. It's okay. And, you know, after I had slept on it, I realized, I think, you know, absent of the energy of the crowd and everything, that I really liked it. I think it's a really good movie. I think that it definitely is exhausting, which is pretty similar of the other Safdie films. I think of the Safdies together, like Good Time and Uncut Gems. It definitely has that frenetic, energetic, exhausting feeling to it, which sometimes for me did not work. But in the moments that it did, it really clicked in. I think that Timothée Chalamet's best performance is still Call Me By Your Name for me, but he's doing a lot here. Like, when you see it, I think it's going to be a really fun performance to talk about throughout the season because he is here to stay for sure this year in the Oscar race. I don't know if he's going to win or anything, but we'll definitely be talking about the performance because he is a little devil in the role, I will say. Like, he is just full of so much physical presence and energy. Also, some of his line readings are so funny. It's like, you did not just say that, but okay, you did. Great. And I think I was waiting for it to hit me emotionally, and he really did in the end. I think that the ending really works for him. I won't spoil it or say any more about that, but by the end, I thought, oh, okay, I got it. And it worked in that crowd for sure. I think that my hero of the movie is honestly Jack Fisk, the production designer, because what he does to create 50s New York is, it's gorgeous. I think it gets just so detailed. Their bowling alleys, the arenas where the table tennis tournaments are taking place look so good. And that's just what you expect from Jack Fisk, of course. But here, I just was constantly impressed, really. And we also have to give credit, I think, to Ronald Bronstein, who has worked with the Safdies and I think been really instrumental to their success and to the types of films they create. And I'm looking forward to seeing it again.
Yeah, looking at Ron Bronstein's credits, being the editor, writer, and producer of the film, that feels like a crazy combination. This movie is buzzy enough as it is. And, you know, looking at A24 slate, it has this film, by Josh Safdie, and then also his brother's film, Benny Safdie's The Smashing Machine, with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I know that didn't do as well at the box office, but again, another awardsy film that we could be talking about throughout the season, seeing how A24 deals with Timmy and him in pushing them for lead actor. This is one of the last movies I would say we have of the year. You know, we'll also talk about Hamnet when that officially comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Some other movies at the fest that we've kind of touched on. The Secret Agent, that was out of TIFF, previously from Cannes. Did you see either Blue Moon, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, or the Springsteen film?
Yes. So we haven't talked about them, but I have seen them. So I didn't see them as part of this festival. I saw If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You and Springsteen at Telluride. So I saw those both there. I love If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. And speaking of the A24 of it all this year, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You is directed by Mary Brownstein, who is Ronald Brownstein's wife. So they also have another little paired connection there. But Rose Byrne's performance in this is, I think, pretty extraordinary. It, as a movie, feels like a panic attack and just kind of never lets you go. But I really enjoyed that. And I recommend this as a double feature with Hamnet because that's how I did it. And wow, you can see really two different portraits of motherhood. And then Springsteen is like very standard music biopic fare. But Jeremy Allen White, I think, is really good in it. His voice is uncanny. He's doing all of his own singing, and it's a really emotionally layered performance. So if you're going to see it, I would recommend, like, if you're a fan of Bruce Springsteen, definitely check it out. I think, though, go see it really just for the Jeremy Allen White performance. Blue Moon, however, I did really like. I think that that's the Linklater film that I actually prefer to Nouvelle Vague. I think both are successful, but Blue Moon, this tells the story of Lauren's Hart, played by Ethan Hawke. It's a great performance. And this, it kind of is, it's his story all in one night, really, in the introduction of Oklahoma. So Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma. So it's immediately after Hart and Richard Rodgers have separated, and Richard Rodgers has gone on to work with Oscar Hammerstein. And Andrew Scott plays Rodgers. He's really good in the part too, but I really think it's Ethan Hawke's show. I would really like for him to be considered in the best actor race this year. And I know that Sony Pictures Classics has this, so I hope they can run a really good campaign. It's a really good, just nostalgic New York movie. So I recommend this one.
Yeah, I'll have to see Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. That's being distributed by 20th Century Studios. And Sony Pictures, we know, does pretty well with getting performances nominated or being in the race. I also recently finally saw Eleanor the Great. I loved June Squibb. So I'm hoping she can show up in some places. And then with If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, it's currently out in New York. So I really do want to run and see that as soon as possible, because this is one of my last and most anticipated of the year, especially for Rose Byrne. So I think from that recommendation, I definitely will go see this. And then with Blue Moon, I now remember that you recommended this to me before, that I would like this, that this really has Linklater's touch. I missed this also at Newfest, which is happening now. Pretty much always year to year continues from New York into that festival. It's New York's LGBTQ plus festival. It's great. And this was their opening night film, but I will definitely check this out when it goes wide. Lots of actors in the conversation and actresses, as we talked about today. If you could give any of these movies one Oscar, what would it be?
You know what? I would give Best Production Design to Jack Fisk for Marty Supreme. That's where I'm going. Obviously, not a shocking answer coming from me, giving my love for this man's work. But really, I think there are a lot of elements within Marty Supreme that you could recognize. Writing, the score, Chalamet. But I'm going with Jack Fisk. He creates so many worlds. There are also these great, like, old 50s New York apartments. You're going from different parts of New York to Tokyo also. So lots of great work on display from him here. So I would give Jack Fisk my Oscar. What about you?
I mean, I remember talking about him during Killers of the Flower Moon. That movie was beautiful. So I can't wait for Marty Supreme. Very different environment. Could you imagine if I gave Surratt Best Picture right now?
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, if you feel it, do it, you know?
I think I'm going to go Best Documentary Feature for Cover Up. This may be my favorite movie of the festival. Surratt is definitely up there, but I was just continually shocked with the information they were sharing with us. I don't know if it was necessarily new information, but it was for me. And I think the way they captured it, they really have your blood boiling and just make you see this greater picture of cover-ups over time, time and again. So yeah, documentary feature. I hope it goes to this. I like your pick too. I can't wait for that. That has a December 25th, Christmas Day release. But it's been a great New York Film Festival. A lot of these movies will be coming out soon, or some have already, or will in the future. We'll mention when those happen. And I'm sure we'll be talking about a lot of them throughout award season.
Yeah, it was a great festival again. I always feel so lucky that we get to go and then we get to see all of these new films. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we will be celebrating the month of October, or Hitchcocktober, rather. We will be doing another installment in our Frequent Collaborator series, and we will be talking about Alfred Hitchcock and the legendary costume designer Edith Head. I can't wait to talk about her. She is an absolute legend, and I love that we're talking about a director and a technician, I'll say, a below-the-line artisan. I think that'll be really fun.
Yeah, I think their collaboration is fantastic. Whenever Edith Head comes up on screen, I clap a little bit, sometimes out loud. I did when I saw All About Eve this past weekend in a theater. That was just extraordinary. But
love that.
Yeah, she's one of our greats, and so is Hitchcock. So I can't wait for this episode. But thank you all for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Blue Sky at Oscar Wilde Pod. We have bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde and updated nomination predictions at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.